Get the Angelry special at McDonald's now. Let's break it down. My favorite barbecue sauce, American cheese, crispy bacon, pickles, onions, and a sesame seed bun, of course. And don't forget the fries and a drink. Sound good?
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating restaurants for a limited time.
Your data is like gold to hackers. And they'll sell it to the highest bidder. Are you protected? McAfee helps shield you, blocking suspicious texts, malicious emails, and fraudulent websites. McAfee Secure VPN lets you browse safely, and its AI-powered tech scam detector spots threats instantly. You'll also get up to $2 million of award-winning antivirus and identity theft protection, all for just $39.99 for your first year. Visit McAfee.com. Cancel anytime. Terms apply.
I'm Candace Lim.
And I'm Kate Lindsay. And you're listening to ICYMI.
In case you missed it.
Slate's podcast about internet culture. And Candace, as of today, we are in the final weekend of award season, which I know for you is basically like a marathon that you've been running for months straight now. It is coming to an end because you are sort of a volunteer award show pundit. If you had a subreddit, that would be the subreddit you moderate.
Yeah.
What are your kind of favorite moments from award season this year, 2024/2025?
Well, first off, thank you so much for the karma. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. I think some of my favorite moments this award season were things like the Wicked holding space meme.
Oh, God.
I mean, this is when Ariana Grande, Cynthia Erivo, they were in a press-stricken interview. The interviewer was a woman named Tracy Ill Gilchrist. She says to Cynthia and Ariana that, quote, people are taking the lyrics of Defying Gravity and really holding space for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's representative of our collective delusion at that time, because it's not like a super remarkable sentence, but everyone's reactions in the room and then like where we were all mentally when we received that clip. I mean, yeah, that blew up like kind of like nothing I've ever seen before in awards season.
I think what's really funny is that Cynthia's reaction was actually also quite nothing. And to be fair, like those actors have been saying that they were really tired during the press tour. And so I think at the moment she was just kind of like, oh, really?
I think I also read that like that was actually filmed like right after the election. And so I think,
oh, yes, yes.
Yeah. So
yes.
I think there was a lot to hold space for in that moment.
Yeah. Including Ariana holding Cynthia's finger.
Right, first and
which,
foremost.
By the way, like, it's funny because, like, the finger holding was almost like the visual component, whereas holding space became the audio component of this meme together. It is a multimedia meme. Okay, an MMMM.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No,
that's
I mean,
one moment I love.
I envy your ability to still have fun with this because one of my first jobs was as an entertainment writer at Refinery 29. Mm-hmm. And so, kind of, I was in that job for 4 years. Award season, all that ever meant to me was working on a Sunday because we would have to come in to the office every award show there was.
Yeah.
We have to be there super late. And when I left that job, one of the first things I was thinking was, I'm never going to watch an award show again. And
I kind
of stuck to that. I just could have seen the clips the next day on TikTok. But
I know. It's a form of resistance.
It is. But I would say I'm also mad at the awards season right now because of the snub that was Challengers.
I know. So here's the deal. Challengers was totally campaigning during this awards season, especially for Best Score by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. Isn't it so funny? They won the Golden Globe and yet didn't even get nominated for an Oscar. An Oscar they've won multiple times. It's fine.
No, it's fine. Not fine, Candace. It's not fine. When I just made a letterbox for the first time. Yeah. And I was like, okay, I should go back and sort of, what are some films that I've loved recently that I want to get on there? And I first one, Challengers, 5
Thank
stars.
You. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And once you follow me on Letterboxd,
oh my God, yeah,
you'll see I've watched it 4 times.
Oh,
anyway,
my gosh.
Look, the reason why I just want to shout out Challengers is because Challengers was kind of trying to campaign during the awards season, it brought us the first happy moment of the year, which was Zendaya debuting her engagement ring from Tom Holland on the Golden Globes red carpet and making me believe in love again.
Yeah, I know. And then did you see, like, there were interviews she was doing after where she was just like constantly using that hand and sort of being like, oh, whoa, I don't know. Yeah, it was really funny.
Yeah, and it's so funny. She was doing this like screening for Challengers, I think like the day after. I was supposed to go to it and I last minute decided not to.
Oh my
God.
And
guess what that is called? A regret. I regret that. I do. But I want to give a shout out to one more person. Okay, I need to give it up to Conclave.
Conclave the person.
Conclave the person, because I really think they had probably the best grassroots online campaign.
But it is crazy, crazy timing that the Vatican, as Conclave is up for a bunch of Oscars, did report that the Pope was not doing too well. So people were like, are we going to have another conclave soon?
Yeah. I weirdly wonder if a lot more people are going to like make the trek to the Vatican and like stake outside and basically become conclave influencers. This is their tart trip. This is their tart trip.
I mean, it's crazy the way that people have taken this, what could have been kind of, I mean, I watched it. I loved it. Also, I think give it 4 stars on Letterboxd, but how people kind of, I don't know. They decided they saw this movie that could be serious, dry, moving. And they were like, actually, it's cunty. And then
it is. Yeah. It is. Because like, look, the reason why I love Conclave is because the fan cams, I think, are probably the best ones I've seen this year. I'm thinking Cardinal Tedesco vaping. Okay. Mm-hmm. To Girl So Confusing and Boys and Hoes Mad and my personal favorite, The Baddest. And like, I just feel like I need to credit two people for validating Conclave Hive, and that is Bald and Dowd and Pope Crave, a.k.a. Club Conclave.
Yeah, those are my popes.
Exactly, exactly. And the thing is, like, look, I'm not delusional. I know Conclave is not exactly a front runner for some of their categories at the Oscars this year, but I feel like the fan cams would tell you otherwise.
They've won the fan cam awards.
Exactly, because they would tell you that like Conclave is the only movie that exists, actually. And guess what? They're right.
Yeah, no, it's the fun that people are having with these films is kind of like the highlight of this awards season. But I would argue the internet did a lot of oppo campaigning this year.
Yeah, as we're kind of remembering like the internet's role in award season this year, I do think Twitter and the whole internet definitely attempted to dunk on like 3 campaigns, only 2 survived. I'll start with Anora. Mikey Madison, she said she declined to use an intimacy coordinator on set, even though it was offered to her. That turned into a whole conversation about how like intimacy coordinators don't only protect actors, but also the crew. And this kind of became a convo about like making the set a safe set for all people involved, which I thought was like a good conversation.
Yeah, and I'm glad it died down because I love that movie. I want it to get awards. I love Igor. It like genuinely moved me. Yeah. I'm all out for Anora, and it swept the Producers and Directors Guild Awards. So I don't know. Now it's kind of, I know it was kind of seen as maybe being left behind in the earlier stages of awards season, but now it's kind of a front runner. And that might be where my loyalties lie in this, but I don't know. I'm open to being swayed.
Yeah, yeah. And another campaign that I feel like was also under a similar threat from the internet, specifically Twitter. I actually would love to read a tweet about this movie that was posted back in October, and I would love for you, Kate, to like guess which movie this person's talking about. This tweet is from culture writer Ian Artan, who wrote, "I'm being deadly serious when I say we need to find a way to award trailer editors because I had almost no interest in seeing this film before, and now it's maybe my most anticipated movie of the year." Kate, what movie do you think they're talking about?
Paddington 3.
Ah, okay. Wow, wow, wow. First off, I have seen that.
I saw it alone at Nighthawk.
Oh my God, and it was good,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, oh my God. Great time. How can you have a bad time at Paddington 3? But I'm guessing that's not the answer.
So unfortunately, it's not. The answer is The Brutalist. Okay, they were talking about The Brutalist, which, look, The Brutalist was doing well this award season. The Golden Globes, big night for them. But in January, the editor of The Brutalist revealed that the film used AI, and they specifically, quote, improved the authenticity of the Hungarian dialogue of stars Adrian Brody and Felicity Jones, also saying that, like, generative AI was used in the final sequence of The Brutalist to create a series of architectural drawings and finished buildings. These are all words. And Brady Corbet, who is the director of the film, he like tried to mitigate the backlash. And I don't know if this like ruined The Brutalist's Oscar chances, but you know, you will notice that at like recent shows, like the PGAs and the DGAs, The Brutalist didn't win in some places they were expected to.
I have not seen The Brutalist. I fundamentally object to the concept of an intermission in a film.
I know.
Which I know, other people who are really serious about film will get on me for that. And it's like, you know, I'm here for the Paddington threes.
I know.
There's space for all of us.
I know, yeah.
But if you want to talk about ruining chances, I think there's one Oscar former front runner that comes to mind, and it has to do with old tweets.
Yes, because I would say the biggest story from this award season that we will be remembering is how Twitter got Emilia Perez. First off, have you seen this movie?
No. This is another one I haven't seen because people whose opinions I often agree with hated it, and people whose opinions I often don't agree with loved it. So I made an informed decision based on that.
Yeah. So basically in January, journalist Sarah Hagi, she posted screenshots of resurfaced, still up at the time, tweets from the star of Emilia Perez, Carla Sofia Gascon, who is Oscar nominated for Best Actress. And these tweets were speaking of, they were horrible, I guess.
Yeah, they were racist, Islamophobic. In 2020, she tweeted not great things about the murder of George Floyd. I mean, it was like the Hunger Games canon of bad tweets. Like, every time you look up and it's just someone or something totally new and different. She was the Lea Michele of discrimination, let's just say that, coming for everyone who has ever existed.
Yeah, and I think the question that, like, literally still remains to this day is, how did Netflix, who funded and really pushed Emilia Perez this award season, how did they not clock these tweets at all? Because my theory is that, like, they just didn't have the time to, like, translate all of Gascon's tweets. And so they were like, oh, it's fine. Like, she's probably tweeting something really funny. Ha ha ha. Voters won't check either.
No, that's fully what I think as well. And what is wild to me, you know, I am team delete your tweets, delete your internet footprint.
Right.
Like every, I don't know, even every few years, whatever. Not because you like necessarily have something to hide, but I just think it's good like internet hygiene to just, no, nothing should be up there forever. And it was almost kind of a 2010s throwback moment of old tweets taking someone down because most of us, I think, have learned better by now. But Emilia Perez is kind of now firmly not in the front-runner conversation of the Oscars, right? Like, Gascon is not winning the Oscar. Emilia better not win Best Picture, even though I think early on it kind of seemed like things were heading that way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I really think Twitter officially threw the Emilia Perez is over party, and that movie has lost the plot, lost the season. But I do think there is one Oscar nominee that has pulled a late stage but very successful campaign because of Twitter. And I would argue Twitter has like cemented him as one of the greats for a long time.
I think I know who you're talking about. The glaring omission in our conversation so far. But first, I think we should take a break. After the break, we're going to talk about the full court press Twitter has pulled on behalf of one Timothy Chalamet and why Club Chalamet may be the key to his success this season.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You often hear about the red flags that should be avoided, but what if you focused more on looking for green flags in friends and partners? If you're not sure what they look like, therapy can help you identify green flags, actively practice them in your relationships, and embody the green flag energy yourself. Whether you're dating, married, building a friendship, or just working on yourself, it's time to form relationships that love you back. BetterHelp is fully online, making therapy affordable and convenient, serving over 5 million people worldwide. Access a diverse network of more than 30,000 credentialed therapists with a wide range of specialties. You can easily switch therapists anytime at no extra cost. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. Discover your relationship green flags with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ICYMI today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ICYMI.
Oh, ICYMI listeners, do I have a scoop for you? So what is it, you ask? It's that Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Now, before anyone goes suggesting that this is just a rumor, know that there's actual proof that this kettle of tea is not only piping hot, but 100% true. So, yeah, sometimes it pays to be a little nosy, but it always pays to discover.
based on the February 2024 Nielsen report. Learn more at discover.com/creditcard.
And we're back. So, Kate, I think we just have to talk about the absolute smash of an Oscars campaign Timmy Tim has pulled this year. Because honestly, I had little faith in a complete unknown. Mm-hmm. Okay, I know the biopic is usually like a slam dunk for Best Actor winners, but I just did not think his campaign was like winning the traditional markers leading up to the Oscars.
Right. And maybe it's because he was winning, well, the untraditional markers, aka Twitter, but he was kind of capturing a different demographic, which we can kind of get into. So let's just start with, what were the biggest or most important moments of Timmy's campaign that you think got him to this place where he's like toe-to-toe with Adrian Brody?
Yeah, I think there's three. To me, the campaign officially started on October 28th with the Timothy Chalamet lookalike contest in New York City. This was so long ago that you were not even the co-host of this podcast yet. But I actually never asked you how you felt about it. Were you there? Did you attend other lookalike contests? What was your experience lived?
I didn't attend because I knew that I knew what was going to happen, which did happen, which is that every single outlet was going to be there and write their own story. And it, so I know people got fatigued with all the lookalike contest stuff. I really thought it was fun. I thought it was kind of the internet at its best. Like, I do think the purpose of the internet is to create community. And I think it's even better when that community happens IRL. I thought it was really fun. But I think him attending the actual contest, and he was one of the few who actually appeared, although shout out to Glenn Powell's mom, who judged his.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I think it was evidence that he was in on it in the sense that he knew, oh, this is going to play really well if I show up. The internet's going to go wild.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Look at the actors who are nominated this year. He is the youngest by a landslide, and I think there's something there about the way, if he wanted to, if he didn't have these like great publicists behind him, he probably could run his own Oscars campaign from his bedroom, because he has been so online for his entire adolescent life that he knows what is going to get the girls going.
Well, I do wonder if he's, I don't know, being more vocal in his press, because I think the thing that has struck a lot of people with this Oscars campaign is this is not the Timothée Chalamet they remember, like the Timothée Chalamet of Call Me By Your Name or Lady Bird. Like, it was like this indie heartthrob, very alt. And now he's going on College Game Day.
Oh, yeah.
He went on College Game Day on December 7th. ESPN is still a very traditional medium on TV, but I do think he was channeling something else, which is a lot of guys online, guys who are really into sports. They would love for an ESPN producer to see their tweets and be like, hey, do you want to come on the show? And Timmy lived out a lot of those dreams by not only going on game day, but like absolutely knowing his stuff. Like, I think in a way that if you knew Timmy from Lady Bird, Call Me By Your Name, you wouldn't be like, that's a sports guy. But then it felt like one of your followers going on ESPN. You couldn't help but root for him. It was very charming.
Yeah, I think similarly, another like boy rooting for boy moment that did help Timmy's campaign was days before he went on game day, Bob Dylan tweeted that Timmy's a brilliant actor. And essentially he supported Timmy playing Bob in A Complete Unknown. And I know it feels small, but Bob Dylan to me is like kind of a prehistoric hater. And as two people who know what it's like to be a hater online, you and me, if a hater likes something, that thing is golden in God's eyes. Mm-hmm. You cannot touch them.
But what is more important, do you think? Having Bob Dylan co-sign your performance or having someone like Club Chalamet support all of your performances?
This is a biblical question, because we have talked about Club Chalamet like multiple times on this show, and I think it's a good time, okay, as the Complete Unknown campaign's about to end, to just check in on Club Chalamet, reintroduce her as a concept, if not a religion, to those who are not blessed to know her.
It would be an honor to introduce Club Chalamet, aka Simone Cromer, to the audience. So Club Chalamet is a Twitter and Instagram account. It's run by this woman named Simone. She describes herself as a Gen X Timothée Chalamet superfan. She posts updates about him. She posts all the Getty images of him that arrive from events. She attends some of these events. She does everything she can to support him in the box office and especially awards season.
Yeah. I think the craziest lore about her is that she was not always a Timothée Chalamet stan.
This is true. This is also crazy because she has the presence of someone who has lived and breathed Timothée Chalamet for her entire life, even before he was born. But she only joined Twitter in 2018. Before that, word on the street is that she was a Michael Fassbender stan account. And then I guess Call Me By Your Name, which came out in 2017, changed everything. Like a lot of people. She saw Timothée Chalamet in that movie and said, something has been awoken in me. And, you know, Club Chalamet was born. So for some time, she was mostly just a figure of note in the extended Timothée Chalamet universe. But she ended up going super viral in September 2023 when Timothée Chalamet and Kylie Jenner started appearing in public together, confirming some rumors that they were a couple that I know I definitely didn't believe until I started to see these photos.
They did a Beyonce concert hard launch. I remember this day. Oh my God. Oh my God.
No, and the only person who had a more visceral reaction than you and I is Club Chalamet. She was not happy. She, you know, used kind of self-care language to tell her community to sort of take time away from social media if they need to sort of process this news. She, however, did not do that. She kind of doubled down on her feelings to the point that, like, she refused to believe this relationship was real or happening of Timothée's own accord. She was kind of pushing this conspiracy theory that someone like Kris Jenner, maybe, or someone in the Kardashian-Jenner family was blackmailing Timmy into this relationship.
I mean, I remember this great tweet during this time that was like, Kylie is exactly Timothée's type. I don't know why art hoes are crying on here like no one told you to get a bob and a tote bag.
I know. And that's like, honestly, if we really want to think about it, this is the beginning of this Timothée Chalamet rebrand. You know, he's not some sophisticated, introspective art hoe. He likes sports. He likes Kylie Jenner. He's a guy.
Baddies.
Yes, exactly. So it was shocking at first, but clearly over a year later, they're still together. She's still by his side. But speaking of shocking is perhaps Club Chalamet's other most famous post, which happened during the same week as this initial viral moment. She dropped that she was almost in the World Trade Center on 9/11.
That must have been a rough week for her, you know, and look, basically, the tweet is that she said that in July of 2001, she turned down a job opportunity on the 102nd floor of the World Trade Center because she had a, quote, bad gut feeling.
And this just, this post just sent her even more viral, mostly because it was like, her lore is just all over the place. First, she's a Michael Fassbender fan account. Then she's alleging a conspiracy theory between Kylie and Timmy. And then now there's this whole 9/11 reveal. And when this was happening, I actually tried to interview her for Vulture. And we had a little bit of a back and forth over email.
Okay, so Kate, you just dropped huge lore.
Lore about
I need
me.
To know everything. Like, what you guys talk about? How often was it? Just what were the vibes? Tell me everything, please.
Would love to. So I won't quote directly because ultimately she declined to be interviewed. But she was very professional and, you know, kind as she could be for someone who was receiving emails trying to interview her in the midst of a viral moment that was not kind to her. And she was like, you know, initially she was like, I'm going to decline. Like, things are just too hot right now, but let's keep checking in. And so we did. We would check in every once in a while. The most recent one was all the way into 2024. She said specifically she respected that I was actually one of the first places to reach out to her. And so she was going to keep that in mind. But ultimately, she was always just too wary of inciting or harassment. Even though I would say people have really come around on her. She's kind of an icon of sorts. She went through a lot. And for the most part, she wasn't really doing anything wrong.
Yeah. And Kate, one day, I really beg of you to please show me the emails.
Oh, absolutely.
In person. Like, we can get coffee. I'll buy you the coffee, and that'll be the price for entry. I need to see these so bad.
Oh, my God. Slate Plus, my emails with Club Chalamet.
That'd be amazing. And, I mean, you're right. We should be so lucky to have a Club Chalamet on our side.
Yeah. And, you know, I think the only real criticism that you could leverage against her is maybe she's a little too much. She knows a lot about Timothée Chalamet. She's taken so many photos with him. And she feels kind of a level of ownership, protectiveness of him that's kind of unclear if he is comfortable with.
Yeah. And I did want to bring up a tweet of hers.
Please do.
From 2024. So grain of salt. But she said, I know he appreciates my support. And his sister told me that he said, she's cool.
And listen, Timothy's never said that about me. So I've never been called cool by Timothée Chalamet. So fair enough. But the question of what crosses a line when it comes to fan accounts is something that has become more pertinent these past few years, especially as social media has given fans more access into celebrities' lives. But before we do that conversation, Candace, let's take a break. When we're back, let's chat about what it looks like when fan accounts go too far, as well as highlight some fan accounts who are doing it right, including, spoiler alert, my own fan account.
Get the Angel Reese special at McDonald's now. Let's break it down. My favorite barbecue sauce, American cheese, crispy bacon, pickles, onions, and a sesame seed bun, of course. And don't forget the fries and a drink. Sound good?
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating restaurants for a limited time.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever find yourself playing the budgeting game, shifting a little money here, a little there, just hoping it all works out? Well, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive, you can be a better budgeter and potentially lower your insurance bill, too. You tell Progressive what you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll help you find options within your budget. Try it today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Not available in all states.
Alaska Airlines and Hawaiian Airlines have come together, bringing you more destinations and even more rewards. Now your miles add up no matter which airline you fly. Head to Hawaii with Hawaiian or explore Mexico, the Bahamas, the East Coast, and beyond with Alaska. Your loyalty just got a major upgrade. More flights from the West Coast, more perks, and more ways to earn. Book now at alaskaair.com.
And we're back. So when we talk about fandoms going too far, a few examples come to mind. The first obvious one to me are Larrys, a.k.a. those who ship Harry Styles and Louis Tomlinson from One Direction. Mm-hmm. Caitlin Tiffany's book, Everything I Need I Get From You, How Fangirls Created the Internet as We Know It, has a great deep dive on this ship. But essentially, conspiracy theories about their relationship became so obsessive that if you look, you hardly see them interact or get photographed together anymore, likely, I imagine, to prevent inciting another wave of interest from this group.
Yeah, and we've talked about the Larrys in past episodes. Former co-host of the show, Rachel Hampton, and I, we are Directioners, okay? And while Larrys are not a fan account, I'd also add those accounts that chart celebrities' private jets into the mix. You know, on one hand, it's like, yeah, okay, highlight how wasteful Taylor Swift's private jet usage is. But on the other, I do see how, especially with someone of her level of notoriety, her team would kind of object to that information being out there. It's a security concern.
Yeah, and that's a perfect example of just how much access there is to celebrities these days. Like, even back when Kim Kardashian had that robbery in Paris, the people who robbed her told Vice News that they used her social media account to see what jewelry she was wearing. That's how they found out that she had these things. And they also knew she would be in Paris from social media and her general whereabouts. And that kind of helped them zero in.
Yeah. And so to be a responsible fan account, you have to essentially decide you won't use or share certain information. It's on you.
And I think an account that does a great job of this is actually Paul Mescal Pics. She kind of has a rule. She doesn't post paparazzi pics of Paul or any sort of covertly taken pictures by people who might see him out and about. You know, just generally no photos that were taken without his consent. And she also, and I think this is good, blocks anyone who in the comments is weird about like women that he's dating or being seen with, which, you know, happens to Timothée Chalamet, but she's like, I won't stand for it. Delete, block.
Yeah. I mean, I love the video of Paul Mescal and Paul Mescal Pics meeting in real life, going head to head and like Paul Mescal trivia. It's quite funny.
I would say that is within, I mean, this is a huge thing to say, but within my top 10 favorite videos of the internet, because it is so sweet and funny. It was part of the promo that Paramount did for Gladiator 2. And it's just a really wholesome interaction. They're basically doing a quiz, and both her and Paul, they have to be the first to sort of answer a question about Paul. And it was so funny to see her correct him on things or know more than he did, including like when he graduated from drama school. Yes. He got it wrong, but it wasn't creepy or unsettling. They both clearly had respect for each other, and they were just being playful.
I mean, I think this is a good example of like why celebrities need stan accounts. And sometimes it's because like stans know more about you than you know about yourself. They see you in your best light when like really just like think about how much we all hate ourselves sometimes. And yet they see you're good and you're bad, and they still choose to like see the best in you and choose to be a fan of you. I mean, how many like normal, regular people can say they are a fan of themselves, okay? Even Paul Mescal does not seem to be a fan of himself sometimes.
No, my brain is so broken that if I was ever lucky enough to have a fan account made of me, I'd be like reporting it for misinformation.
Oh my God.
Like, wrong, wrong. But, you know, they're doing work. You get publicists, it's their job to sort of place actors or their clients or whoever in hopes of positive coverage. But it's always a gamble. Fan accounts, no, they're always going to be positive. They're going to do free promo. They're going to share information. And I think it's why we don't see Timmy saying much about Club Chalamet. Regardless of how he feels about her, she's done great PR for him.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we talk about healthy fan behavior, I do think something that we maybe need to start respecting is just the fact that, like, stans are experts, okay? They are sources. You can call them crazy or delusional, in need of touching grass, but you have to admit their knowledge is encyclopedic. And standoms, I have to say, actually sometimes make me feel hopeful, because I kind of have this moment of, like, look, if everything in my life went down, I think there's one thing I can rely on, which is the fact that Club Chalamet will still be out here posting updates on Timothy Chalamet. And you know what? In a weird way, I could care about her and thereby care about Timmy and root for him as like a distraction from, oh, I don't know, living in Trump's America or something like that.
No, literally, you know? Club Chalamet's house, like, really tragically burned down in the fires in LA. And that did not stop her.
Like, no, she was on it.
I think it almost, I don't know, I imagine it. Even in times of turmoil like that, she had a true purpose, and it was fighting the fight for Timmy. And I'll just say, I alluded to it earlier, I have a unique perspective in this conversation.
Because
I don't know if you were aware of this, Candace, but you this whole time have been talking to the admin of the fuckyeahdanielradcliffe.tumblr.com. And actually, I was looking into this, and it's highly possible I had to make it Dan Radcliffe or do some kind of play on it, because there were multiple fan accounts for Daniel Radcliffe, but that was sort of part of the culture. We respected one another. We were not competitors. We were allies in spreading the good word. There was also sort of, I'm trying to think of other things we did that were kind of rules. I think crediting photos was a big one. Like, you couldn't just newly post a photo either without crediting it, or preferably you're reblogging it from the original creator, or, you know, that people would make edits of the photos and things like that. Like, that was really important. And once someone, because I had not a staff, but I did have people who were on my behalf as I was, you know, in school and things like that, who volunteered to keep posting and add their own photos, source their own information for it. But one time someone did post a photo without credit, and I remember like getting a message being like, hey, this is uncredited.
Oh my God.
They had to be dealt with. I think I just like deleted the photo.
Wow, you fired them.
But it was serious. And Candace, I don't know, who would you run a fan account for, or who do you secretly run a fan account for?
Wow. Well, this is tough because running the Kate Lindsay fan account actually is very important to me.
Misinformation.
I mean, look, just to really wrap up the Oscars convo here, I do have to say there is someone I did not mention who I do think won this award season. And his name is Drew Starkey, okay? Because, look, Drew Starkey is an actor. He was in the movie Queer. And from that cast, Daniel Craig was kind of in the conversation for a possible nom. It didn't happen. But what did happen is that Drew's stock went up. And I would say that, like, him being taken seriously by being in a Luca Guadagnino film. It's all great because guess what? He's going to be in like an Apple TV Plus series with Anya Taylor-Joy. I'm just so proud of him. I do think the fan cams played a big part in this casting. And I will be looking into the Club Starkey handle after this. Please don't steal it, Kate. Please don't.
You know, something is for a whole other episode, but Luca is at the scene of the crime for a lot of what we're talking about. There's Timmy, there's Challengers.
You're so right.
Listen, wait, I don't Luca. Know. Something there. Maybe Luca. He's behind all these accounts.
Luca's but, Chloe Chalamet. Oh my God.
Ultimately, this is why I'm rooting for Timothy Chalamet in the Oscars, because Club Chalamet has been putting in the work for this since 2018. And so if Timmy wins, Club Chalamet wins.
Yeah. And when Club wins, we all win.
We all win. Okay, that's the show. We'll be back in your feed on Wednesday, so definitely subscribe. That way you never miss an episode. Please leave a rating and review in Apple or Spotify and tell your friends about us. You can follow us on Twitter at @ICYMI_pod, and you can always drop us a note at ICYMI@slate.com.
ICYMI is produced by Alexandra Boti, Kate Lindsay, and me, Candace Lim. Daisy Rosario is our senior supervising producer, and Hillary Fry is Slate's editor-in-chief. See you online.
Or on fuckyeahdanielradcliffe.tumblr.com.
Get the injury special at McDonald's now. Let's break it down. My favorite barbecue sauce, American cheese, crispy bacon, pickles, onions, and a sesame seed bun, of course. And don't forget the fries and a drink. Sound good?
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating restaurants for a limited time.